you're back. How was it, dear? Herbert? Are you all right? Is something the matter? Are you ill? Oh, God. Are you dying? Right, this calls for emergency action.
Thank you, dear. I really needed that.
What on earth happened?
The horrors I have seen. That I've heard, Jane.
You weren't making a sound. I've never seen you so quiet before. It was distinctly unnerving. Here, have another scone.
Thank you.
Now, when you feel ready, you can tell me what happened. Nice and slow, take your time.
Oh. Well, I arrived precisely when I meant to, but not quite where I meant to.
What do you mean by that?
You see, I arrived at Victor Hugo's house.
Which is what you intended, is it not?
Well, yes, but actually, no. My coordinates were slightly off. I arrived inside his writing room.
And that's so awful because...
You know how some writers have funny little quirks or habits to help them write?
Oh, yes. Like how you stick out your tongue when you're writing a particularly poignant moment.
Yes, exactly that. Excuse me, I do not.
Of course not, dear. Do continue.
Well, upon my arrival, I discovered that Victor Hugo liked to write in his birthday suit.
I beg your pardon?
You know, as the French say, au naturel, in a state of nature.
I've never been good at French.
In the altogether, in the buff, undraped, divested, exposed.
Sorry, you're going to have to be a bit more blunt.
He was without a stitch on, only wearing a smile, in the raw. He was...
Garmentless?
He was completely stark mother naked. This isn't funny, Jane.
How is it not funny? You barged in on and saw one of history's greatest writers all hanging out.
It was humiliating. I got an unwarranted faceful of baguette and de camembert.
And not a taste.
In the name of basic human decency, I beg of you to stop.
As you insist, dear. I just think it's ironic that someone who believes in free love as much as you do is the one being a prude.
Free love and Victor Hugo's bread and cheese are not something I want to associate with one another, thank you. Though, speaking of free love, the man was not alone.
Oh, dear Lord.
Oh, yes.
You mean to say...
I do mean to say.
They were basket making.
He was certainly playing the blanket hornpipe, yes.
My word.
Or while writing, I might add.
He must be terribly good at multitasking.
That's one word for it. Thankfully, he wrapped it up with this lady of the night once I arrived.
But wasn't it in the middle of the day?
You know what I mean. Anyway, the next thing he did was hand me his diary.
Oh, I didn't know Victor Hugo kept a diary.
You're lucky that you didn't know he kept a diary.
If I may be so bold, what was in the diary?
It was a sex diary.
Oh, well, visiting Victor Hugo, you really should have expected this, dear.
Excuse me?
His scandalousness is quite famously known, Herbert. Don't you know what happened when he died?
Honestly, I'm not entirely sure I want to know at this point.
Well, upon Hugo's death, every brothel in Paris closed down for the day in mourning to allow all the workers a chance to pay their respects. They all wore black armbands and other black items.
You know, after the scene I stumbled upon, I'm hardly surprised.
All right, but besides all that, everything else went smoothly, right? It got worse, didn't it?
Yeah.
Do go on.
So, once he'd gotten himself afternoonified, let's say we sat down. I set up the phonautograph and we began the interview. Great. Fan-bloody-tastic.
Yes. Fabulous, dear. You were being sarcastic, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
Upon our interview beginning, perhaps around just 2 minutes in, I realized my most egregious error. I had forgotten about Hugo's verbose vocabulary and inability to paraphrase.
How positively paraphrastic.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Every point he made took what felt like 5 minutes to make. He went on these endless tangents, seemingly completely unrelated to anything, and yet somehow it would lead directly to the one minuscule point he was trying to make.
Oh, come on, Herbert. You're very good at going on meandering tangents yourself.
Jane, in comparison to Hugo, I'm practically Mark Twain. He went on a 30-minute rant.
A thing you do regularly?
Yes, but not about the Parisian sewer system.
How much can one possibly have to say on the Parisian sewer system?
Apparently an awful lot, Jane.
What is there to say about it, apart from how vast and filthy it is?
There is no guano as fertile as the excreta of a capital. A big city is the most potent of dung beetles. Put the city to work manuring the plain and you just can't fail. If our gold is dung, our dung, on the other hand, is gold.
That's lovely, dear, but could you...
What do we do with this gold dung? We sweep it into the void. We send out convoys of ships at the great cost to harvest the droppings of petrels and penguins at the South Pole.
All right, I get the point, dear.
And the supply of incalculable opulence that we have to hand, we send into the sea. If all human and animal manure that the world loses were put back into the soil...
That is enough! Thank you, Herbert. Was there anything he talked about that wasn't the Parisian sewer system?
He told me he fell asleep while Oscar Wilde was talking to him at a party once.
You what?
I know, right? The nerve of that man. Wilde may be a little wild in his ramblings sometimes, but you'd think a man who wrote 46 pages on the Battle of Waterloo in order to make one minuscule point about a character that could have been referenced in merely a sentence or one chapter would have the decency to listen. But no, apparently dreaming about the inherent beauty of Paris's shit disposal is much more appealing.
Dear, you've spilt your tea all over the floor.
Huh? Oh, I'm sorry, dear.
It's all right. Just, there has to be one positive thing that came out of all of this, right?
Well, I suppose there is one thing I learnt that was rather humorous.
Oh, go on.
He once posted a live bat to his editor just to see if he could.
I suddenly feel better about all the bother we've given Willie and Ernest Henley over the years.
Me too, honestly.
Well, at least you got your interview with Hugo, right?
I destroyed it.
What? Why?
Well, first of all, he went on and on for so long the wax cylinder completely ran out.
But you still had part of the interview on there.
But Jane, you don't understand. I couldn't keep it. What I heard was not meant to be heard by my ears, and most certainly not yours.
What on earth are you talking about?
Jane, Victor Hugo is French.
Well, obviously.
He can only speak French.
Yes, I know. That's why you got your brother to...
Create the translator, I know.
So what's the problem with that?
My brother created the translator, Jane. What did the translator sound like?
Frank said that he created it. It sounded just like...
That's right. Exactly like...
Him.
I had to listen to the voice of my brother explain a sex diary to me. And lots more besides.
I honestly don't know what to say, Herbert. That sounds just awful.
It's fine. Objectively horrifying, but it's fine. I smashed the cylinder, so no mortal ear would be forced to hear it.
But all that was said and learnt was lost.
That's where you're wrong, Jane. It's all right here, in my head. It will never leave. Maybe this should be the end of my interviews. All of them have been disastrous on some level. Maybe I shouldn't have made the time machine at all.
Herbert, you didn't say time machine correctly.
What's the point?
Right, that's it. We can't have that. We're fixing this. You've got to continue these interviews. They usually give you so much joy.
Well, I feel like Geoffrey Chaucer would only prove my point further.
Herbert, have you thought of interviewing women?
Huh?
Now, I'm not calling you prejudiced or anything similar, but you have only been interviewing men so far. Perhaps interviewing some female authors would give you a nice break of sorts, give you a different viewpoint on things.
Yes. Yes, maybe you're right, Jane. Maybe I need to diversify my interviews a little. Women are much more polite and put together than men. They could be the answer to all my problems.
I really hope you're exaggerating.
Why, yes, of course. Thank you, Jane. I really don't know what I'd do without you.
Drown in a pile of unwashed laundry, buried alive outside by our children gone rogue.
True, very true. Any recommendations as to who I should visit first?
So much choice. Ooh, I know, how about the Bronte sisters? Or Emily Dickinson?
Of course, the Bronte sisters. A three-in-one interview, it would be perfect. I better start drafting questions and calculating the coordinates.
I'm glad to see you back to your eccentric, overworking self.
And you don't regret it?
If the alternative is a serious case of melancholia, not a single bit.
This podcast was brought to you by Turpentine Productions. You can find us on Tumblr at Turpentine Productions, Twitter at Turpentine Pod, and Facebook at H.G. Wells Has His Regrets. Or check out our website at www.hgwellshashisregrets.wordpress.com. This episode of H.G. Wells Has His Regrets was written by Emily Hancock and Francesca Mylord Ford, and produced by Francesca Mylord Ford. Music by Emily Hancock and Joe Ashkari, and sound design by Howard White. This show was created and executive produced by Emily Hancock. H.G. Wells was voiced by James Carpenter, and Catherine Jane Wells was voiced by Georgia Fisk. This podcast is fictitious, and all characters within are merely fictional interpretations of the people they're based on, and are not to be taken as serious or accurate portrayals. We'll end the episode with a quote from Victor Hugo. Reason is intelligence taking exercise. Imagination is intelligence with an erection. Thanks for listening.